Welcome back to this second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
Did not know that.
All right, we're back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. Always so fun to talk in between. We are getting to know everyone's middle names.
Oh my gosh, I'm learning so many things here today. I had no idea.
Yeah. Oh, welcome back to hour number two of Leading Edge Medicine. I'm Lynette, and here is that number to get through with your calls about your eyes. Maybe a recent diagnosis for you or a loved one, or perhaps you just don't understand some of the symptoms that you are seeing and feeling as we're all aging. This is the time to call 800-465-8770. Let's talk about them with Dr. Umat, Dr. Gilbert, and Dr. Pentland here as well. Now, we do have a Heart Health Day coming up, and it's happening on Thursday, May 9th. And Dr. Umat, could you tell us more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Wendy had a great question for us earlier just now, and it's about this test. So basically, knowing just your cholesterol numbers is not enough anymore. Remember, heart disease is the number one killer in the United States today. You do not want to be a part of that statistic. You don't want to find out after you've had your first cardiac event. Unfortunately, too many people find out with their first cardiac event. Mm-hmm. You want to know before this. And nowadays, because of the advances in medicine, not only can you find out, you can actually know what your personal risk profile is, and then you can actually do something about it.
That's good.
That is the reason why you need to know. So if you have my uncle or my relative so-and-so, my father's side, my mom's side, they all had heart attacks in their young ages. Well, this is a test you need to take. You cannot ignore it. But because you know that you can actually get something done about it, and it's not that difficult or that expensive to do something about it, that's why you want to know. So the Cleveland panel is a specialized fractionation of the lipid profile. It tells you about inflammation markers. It tells you about the particle sizes and the particle numbers, and also about apolipoprotein particles that are carrier molecules between the liver, so telling us whether there's congestion in the liver, and genetic markers. And then especially for Longevity Medical Clinic, we had them add the Omega check, because really, there's no other way to know whether you're taking enough fish oil or not. And this test tells us. I've been surprised at how many times patients have come to me and said, I do take fish oil, and they stay on the same dose. But when we test them, we realize that they're actually not even taking anywhere near what they need to take. There is tremendous value in this $300 test. And we're opening this up to radio show listeners that are not longevity patients, because longevity patients have had access to this for a very long time. But the beauty about it is that if you're at all interested in doing the longevity labs and then becoming a longevity patient, we will actually discount this test for free and use the fees that you pay towards your longevity dues. Mm. So that's how strongly we feel about the value of this test. Because once we know, then we can send you in for calcium score and other tests and connect you to a cardiologist if you don't already have one. Or if you have somebody, then you can take this data and have them take a look and manage you a little bit better. Sometimes the insurance restricts our physician's ability to order tests for you, and we're taking that out of the equation. So for $300, you can do this whole test. You can have more information, whether it's of interest or whether, you know, it's because nobody's ever done it for you, or whether you need to do something about it. And whatever, wherever your journey is, it's valuable to know, because then you can take steps to prevent complications and problems. The test will pick up markers that will tell us whether the plaque is about to rupture or not, whether you have genetic traits or not, whether there's congestion in the liver, whether you are at risk because the particle sizes are too small and there are too many of them, because not LDL is the same. You know, an LDL of 135 may be completely risk-free for somebody. They may, because the particles are really large and soapy and they're not dangerous, whereas for this, for another individual, that 135 value may be actually very dangerous for them. That's what we pick up with this
Doctor,
test.
What does a patient need to do to prepare for this test?
What happens and how do you prepare? Great question, Dr. Kim.
They have to come in fasting. So make sure you have your fasting. Our team will tell you this when you sign up for the test, but just so you know as well, you have to come fasting for the test. So the sooner in the morning you can get an appointment will be better. And the second thing is don't drink alcohol the day before. It can affect your triglyceride levels. So if you want to make sure you get a good baseline. You know, and I've had a lot of people tell me, yeah, I was going to have a muffin. And then I realized I had a blood test with you. I better not eat that muffin. Yes, what you eat will make a difference to your labs. So be a little careful the day before. Or, you know, sometimes people say, well, I want to know a baseline. I want to know what I am when I'm doing what I'm doing all the time so that then I can decide what to do about it. So wherever you are on this journey, let us help you find out.
So enjoy that ribeye. See what it does to you.
Oh, man.
If you have unlimited money and funds, hey, you can do whatever you want.
That's right. Okay, so if you'd like to sign up, if you're not a longevity patient and you'd like to get more information or get an appointment scheduled for the Heart Health Day, this is on a Thursday, and they're doing this on a Thursday because they have to get the blood test to the lab at a certain time. It's very time.
Yes, we did ask if we could do it on a Saturday, and the answer was no.
No. So we're doing it on Thursday, May 9th, but you do need an appointment. It's happening at all three of our longevity clinics, starting with Kirkland, Tacoma, and Linwood. So you can request whichever one works the best or is closest to you. All right. That number to call to make that appointment is 866-86-YOUNG. That's 866-86-YOUNG. And that's the same number we use for your free health analysis, which we continue to do here at Longevity. Just a great way to introduce you to what we do here at the clinics and get you healthier. And as Dr. Mixon would say, if you were here, leaner, stronger, faster, smarter,
sexier.
Oh, yeah. Except he says it really loud.
Happier.
And happier.
Well, okay.
Yes.
We have to leave something for him to say.
That's true. We'll leave that. So come on in, get your free health analysis. We get some information from you and then do two tests, a blood test and an in-body test to find out what you're at risk for. Things like cancers and heart disease, diabetes, and so much more. We want you to be healthy as you age so you can play with those grandkids on the floor and those great grandkids. So very, very important. We want you to keep moving and be as healthy as you can as you move into your older years, because we're all getting older every single day. That number is 866-86-YOUNG. You can also go to our website, which is lmclinic.com. All right. We have another phone call. Let's go to Tacoma for Casey's question. Hi there, Casey. Good morning.
Well, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
How can we help, sir?
Well, I have a sister-in-law who has Parkinson's-like symptoms. I called in a few weeks ago, and it seems like it's not actually Parkinson's, but was induced by Parkinson's medication.
Right.
That's right, so, yes.
Yeah. At the beginning of the program today, I wasn't able to catch all of the comments about some new kind of therapy that was talked about, and it seemed like, from what I heard, it was related to some type of vitamin B therapy used to treat people with neuropathologies.
Yeah, that was the NAD IV nutrient therapy that we're now offering at Longevity. And that's been studied for neurological disorders, including Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, chronic fatigue, depression, and other aging processes.
So NAD, what does that stand for?
NAD is a derivative of vitamin B3, niacin, and it stands for nicotinamide adenine dinucleotide, which you probably don't want to try to say.
No, that's a big one.
That's why we call it NAD.
NAD, yes.
But it's a coenzyme for energy and energy production in the cell. Like I said, it's energy currency. It requires all cellular life requires NAD, and it decreases a lot as we get older. And so risk for those kinds of diseases where NAD is low gets higher as we get older.
I see. So I heard some mention about the myelinic sheath and how it affects that. Does it rebuild that sheath?
Well, it's improving the energy production in the cell. So all cellular function is improved, and so that's included in that. The neurological cell function is improved.
I see. Now, does a person have to be a patient at Longevity in order to get this treatment?
No, that's you can walk in, but we'll do a consult first.
And is this available at the Tacoma Clinic?
Only at the Kirkland Clinic right now.
Yes, you might have to do a little bit of a road trip, but it's worth it.
No. And what would be the process of setting this up?
Well, you call the front desk and set up an appointment.
Tell me you're interested in the NAD IV therapy. And let me give you that number to call, Casey. That number is 866-86-YOUNG. And you may be able to call. Is our Kirkland Clinic open today?
Not today. Yeah.
Not today, but Monday morning you can call in and get that appointment made.
Right. Casey, there are a lot of our patients that do come in for Tacoma for IV therapies. We do not offer IV therapy anywhere. There's a lot of training involved and safety precautions that we have to take for IV therapies, and that is available at Kirkland, and hence only Kirkland right now. So, maybe in the future we might do it in Tacoma, but right now Tacoma just doesn't have the space either. So we have only Kirkland available for it.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for that information.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Casey.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I remember that phone call.
I do remember it too.
Yeah, because she didn't have Parkinson's, but they had misdiagnosed her. So she's been on the Parkinson's
drugs
for years, and now she's developing symptoms. So.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It was a very tragic story, yeah.
Perhaps that will be able to help her.
Yeah, well, let's hope so.
Yes.
And again, this is not a cure.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a treatment program. It is just something that helps slow down the rate of progression of disease. And some people, if this is a deficiency, they'll actually just feel better. Again, they will need to continue the treatment on a weekly basis for several weeks, so they know. But when they come in for the free consultation, Dr. Pentland will describe everything that he finds on the exam and during the conversation and the process that is involved.
Yeah. Most likely you'll be talking to Dr. Ken Pentland when you come in with your consultation, and he'll be doing the IV therapy for you. That number again is 866-86-YOUNG. We're going to continue taking phone calls here. Let's quickly go to John, at least get his question before our break. Hi, John. You had a question about blood testing?
Hello, John.
Good morning, John.
I signed up for that heart blood test on the 9th, and the question I didn't get answered last week that I meant to ask is, even though I do have heart issues now, is it still warranted to have that blood test done so I could take it to my cardiologist, or is it not advisable to do it if I already have heart issues?
Well, if you don't know what the fractionation numbers are, what the LDL particles are, what the size of the LDL is, what's your myeloperoxidase, what's oxidized LDL, as well as apolipoprotein B, these are important carrier molecules, and then the genetic test, then it is worthwhile doing this. So what you might want to do is look at your MyChart or look at your labs and see how much information about your cholesterol panel do you really have. And if you don't have this, it might help in further management of your cholesterol issues or heart issues.
Well, they just normally put the total cholesterol and stuff. They don't go up any more than that on any of the blood tests. But the deal that I had, I found out that I had aortic stenosis a few years ago.
That's right.
I feel great. I never even knew I had it because I was the one that was proactive and went out and found out that I had it just because I was on Medicare, and they said, do you want to take these blood tests? So I went in for several different places, and this is what they found out, but I don't feel that it's doing anything to me. I still work out and work hard, but so you think it's still warranted for me to come in and have that blood test and
take it
to my cardiologist?
Yeah. So, John, for aortic stenosis, it's not going to change anything. So if that
no,
is the...
No, I know that.
Right. So not for that. So, you know, but if cholesterol or, you know, how much omega do you need, then for that it might be helpful, but not for your aortic stenosis. So for that, you know, if you already know you have aortic stenosis, then it's not going to help in anything.
So the test wouldn't be warranted for somebody who already does that.
Exactly. It would not be.
Well, it wouldn't be for the aortic stenosis,
correct.
But then he has the whole, the rest of the implications.
The testing goes
far beyond aortic stenosis.
Absolutely
so.
Does. Aortic
so
stenosis.
I think the value is still there, it seems to me, but not with implications for the aortic stenosis.
Right. Let's come back after this music and talk about it a little bit more, okay?
Okay, stay there. John. And we will be back with more Leading Edge Medicine, and the phone lines are open for you to talk with our doctors. Call now. Don't wait till the very end of the show. Here is that number. It's 800-465-8770. We'll be right back.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. See all obstacles in my way.
Can they play this song?
You like this one.
Oh,
I can see clearly. It's for our eye doctor. Ooh, I can see clearly. And we have some eye questions coming up with some of our listeners in just a moment. But let's finish up with John.
Let's finish up with John.
Mm-hmm.
John, a great question, and I so appreciate you calling back about it. So if aortic stenosis is the issue, then yet this test will not help anything with aortic stenosis. However, when you hear about heart health, and as we all get older, with cardiac disease being the number one killer in the United States today, if people don't know what their fractionation numbers are, then this can help with that part of it. And then, like I was saying earlier, you know, if you have a high cholesterol value, whether it's total cholesterol or LDL value, you still want to know a little bit more about what does that really mean? Because cholesterol is not bad. We all need cholesterol. Cholesterol is part of every cell. When it becomes bad is when it blocks blood flow, and when a part of it slips off where it's forming a clot, and then it blocks further flow either in the eyes or in the brain or in the kidneys. So if you don't know what is your LDL and whether you have large particles of LDL or small particles of LDL that are dangerous, then this test is of value. And even if you have just borderline high cholesterol levels, you still want to know, because then you can take action to change that number. And it's simple. Whether you need a medication or whether you need to just do it with lifestyle changes will depend upon what this test shows. And sometimes it's easy and within reach. And sometimes a large, scary number can be completely safe because because the particle sizes are much bigger. And so for those people, mm-hmm. you know, they don't have to take statin medications, and statin medications carry their own side effect profile. And so that's the reason to take the test. Do you really need to worry? Can this be modified by lifestyle? Do you need to be on a medication? Do you need to do something else? So those are the advantages of taking this test.
Well, it sounds like there's value to the test. I know that I have aortic stenosis, and at some point I will have to have that TRV, which I will, I won't. I'm not feeling bad with it, but I want to make sure the rest of my heart's doing good too.
Right.
So, but
because
they don't see any other problems with my heart, and then, you know, all they're doing is looking at the stenosis, and all they're doing is waiting for when I get worse and where I get hard breathing, and when I go in to have that TRV put in, that new valve put in my heart and stuff like that. So I'd like to go as many years of possibly not ever having to have it done. So
fair enough. Exactly. And so it's not just the heart working in isolation, it's a whole cardiovascular tree working inside of your body that is connected to everything. And so this test will give you information about the rest of the cardiovascular tree. What are the other blood vessels doing? What is the lipid profile like? Are they blocking something? Is there inflammation? Is there a genetic marker? Those are the kind of things you'll find out.
Mm-hmm. And it would be good to take to my cardiologist and have him look at it. I don't know.
Absolutely.
Most doctors don't look at other people's tests. So
understood. But we actually in our clinic welcome that. And if we can help a patient by, looking at outside labs, we always do that. I encourage it because it helps my patient. At the end of the day, the goal is to help the person sitting in front of you.
Yeah, I love looking at patients' other labs.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
And the Cleveland Cardiovascular Panel is a standard across the United States. So any cardiologist is going to look at that as a serious piece of data.
They are calling themselves the Center of Excellence in blood testing for heart health.
Very good.
And they test for your omegas. They test for your omegas in this test too.
They do. Yes, we created that for longevity. They do it separately, anyways. But for our longevity panel, we asked them to make it a part of the panel.
When I signed up for that blood test a couple of weeks ago, I asked the lady was signed up if there was any restrictions, and she said no. She didn't tell me needed to fast.
Well, so. I'm sorry about that. You do need to fast.
Right. Yes.
And please don't drink alcohol.
That's
the day
right.
Before.
No, I know that from listening. So.
Very good. Sounds like you're set, John.
All right, thank you.
And we'll see you here.
All right, thank you, John, and good luck.
There in Tacoma. All right, this is Leading Edge Medicine. We're taking your calls and talking with the doctors today about all sorts of things. Right now we're headed to Snohomish, and Murray is on the line. Hi there, Murray.
Morning, Murray.
Good morning. It's Murray.
Oh, Murray, okay.
Oh, hi, Murray. Yeah.
There we go.
I have a question. My husband was just diagnosed with inherited retinal dystrophy, and it's kind of a new world to us, so I'm wondering which direction to go. Is this lifestyle stuff? Do we have to get genetic testing? What are your opinions?
Well, so I think you have the beginnings of information, but perhaps not rich enough to get granular on the next steps. Inherited retinal dystrophy, there are actually a list. There are many of them. So you have a dystrophy, and that can be associated with mild changes in vision or progress to severe changes. So it really depends on which dystrophy. Are you seeing a retina specialist?
He saw one time, and so it's just
okay.
We have to figure out which direction to go now, where to go next.
The retina specialist should be able to tell you which dystrophy, what exactly the diagnosis is. So inherited retinal dystrophy is more a category than it is a particular individual disease.
Hmm.
So he has a dystrophy.
He said most likely, this is kind of what I'm reading here, most likely retinitis pigmentosa, pigmento,
okay.
C. pigmento.
Okay. That's so that certainly is an inherited retinal dystrophy, and it's associated with oftentimes pretty severe loss of vision.
Mm.
So he also gave a bunch of other numbers and letters and whatnot, but it says, but cannot rule out ABCA4/PRPH, and then there were a bunch of other letters and numbers. So I was wondering, should a person do you do genetic testing, or
well, I think so. Was this a retina specialist that actually gave you that diagnosis?
Right, it was. Yes,
because they should be able to guide you on which genetic testing would be appropriate to differentiate between the several diagnoses on their list.
Okay. So maybe we should go back there. I wasn't with at the appointment. I probably should have gone with. Yeah, we didn't know if this is, if we should go back to that person or, I mean, we're not scrambling yet, but just finding this out, you know.
Wouldn't they have given a follow-up appointment?
You would think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
None that I know of.
Okay. Hmm.
So maybe you want, you know, I think with the questions that you have, I think a second opinion.
Yes, would so I was be, just thinking that yeah.
Would be pretty valuable, and okay. especially with the next direction. We have a retina specialist in our practice who I know would be helpful with that. Or if you want, where are you?
Snohomish,
so that's close enough.
Not too far from Kirkland.
No, that'd be fine.
Bellevue.
So we could certainly help you with that. Or if you want to call and leave a message, I can give you a list of retina specialists on the east side.
Okay. That sounds good. Yeah, we'll do a second opinion and go from there. Yeah, it sounds
I think that would be wise. Exactly. And especially yeah. now that you're armed with the right questions and you're going to go with him.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. 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 You should make sure that somebody else or yourself is there so you can ask the right questions.
Right.
I mean, the first visit is always a shock when you hear something like this, right?
Right.
And so you don't even remember part of the visit. And then if they're not available to make a follow-up appointment or even to do anything
and
you to
want
tell
to know
you need to know what to do next. Yeah.
The specificity of the diagnosis is going to have implications for the future of his vision as well as the inherited component.
Yeah, that's what I figured. If we could get it more detailed, then we'll know where to go
from
there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, absolutely.
Okay.
Know what to plan for, what treatment.
Right, exactly.
You know, what to do. Exactly. What are your options?
What are the implications for the family?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot
involved
here.
Yep, right. Yeah. He mentioned something about family members. Definitely
second opinion, and then you go with a notepad.
Sensitive to
light.
Yeah,
that's
good. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate
right.
your information.
Thank you.
Good luck, Maria. Thank you for calling. Man, you've got some difficult questions.
Wow. And more to come.
All right. Jeez.
Woo. And Maria, in
case... But you know, people are being affected.
Yeah.
Yes.
No question.
They're in pain.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
They
want to
know.
No
answers.
Absolutely.
And that's disturbing.
There you go. All right. If you'd like to get in touch with Dr. Michael Gilbert and his amazing staff at Northwest Vision Institute, here is that number to call. It's 425-450-2020. That's 425-450-2020 for Dr. Gilbert and his staff at Northwest Vision Institute. We are hearing music, so we're going to take a break and we're going to be back with Arlie in just a moment. Stay right there.
Tequila.
It's Leading Edge Medicine. Hi there. Good Saturday morning. My name is Lynette, along with Dr. Ken Pentland and Dr. Samira Umat, both of Longevity medical clinics. And we also have our special guest doctor in the studio, Dr. Michael Gilbert, my doctor.
Oh.
From my eyes, and your doctor.
Indeed, he is my doctor.
And I'm going to make an appointment.
I think you need to. Yes. And Dr. Mixon's family's doctor. So there you go. Some good. And I drive for quite a ways to see Dr. Gilbert, and he is worth it, and his whole staff. I just love him. Okay.
A great team.
You do. It's people. Like family.
I referred a patient to your son recently.
Oh,
sorry.
Good. No, that's great.
That's right. I came in and I always like to harass Dylan at the front desk. And I'm like, okay, so are you going to be doing my pre-op on Tuesday? And he's like, yes, I'll be checking you in, which is great. You get to talk to him.
Dylan is a great
kid. He's awesome. The whole staff is just amazing. All right. Well, let's talk more about the eyes. I believe Arlie has a question for you. Arlie calling in from Tukwila.
Morning, Arlie.
Good morning. I have been in to see you folks before in Bellevue, but I now going taking care of my vision with the Veterans Administration. I have been diagnosed with macular degeneration. We've gone from dry to wet, and I'm getting injections in the right eye. But my problem is my visual acuity seems to fluctuate quite a bit. And having been trained as an optician, I'm a little bit familiar with what it takes to get things due. And so I run across a little deal called a dial vision. It's a little black pair of glasses that you can actually put your hand up to the side of each deal and dial in anywhere from +3 to a -6. That's 9 diopters of difference.
That's
in
amazing.
A little tiny pair of glasses. And I found it very effective for fine-tuning my vision, much better than the phoropters that is A or B, this and then. My vision fluctuates enough because of my dry eyes that I can't seem to get it nailed. So I recently had a driver's test, and I tried to use this as a way on top of my glasses because I'm about a 10 diopter myope with a little bit of astigmatism.
Wow.
Well, two and a half diopters of astigmatism. But once the astigmatism is corrected, the ability to shift my myopia up and down really is a big help. My question to you, doctor, is that there is anybody else that shows frustrations with the phoropter? And my thinking is, well, when I use a binocular, it's great to be able to fine-tune that with my own hands to bring things into focus with my binoculars. And I found out that this particular dial vision does the same thing. I'm in control of my visual acuity, not giving subjective responses to an optometrist or an optician, anybody that's doing the phoropter. I can't get a good reading because my eyes dry up while I concentrate. And I know my meibomian glands are a little deficient anyway. So anyway, my question has to do with the fact that, do you think there's any advantage
in
the optical technology of this slide focal deal that moves these lenses back and forth in this little frame?
I think it's brilliant technology and very valuable. But honestly, I think you have some unique skills as an optician that you can make it work where I think it would not be a value for the average individual. That said, let's talk about your real problem. When you talk about fluctuation in vision, that because of your dryness, that's what's affecting you the most, it seems to me. And that fluctuation would not be changing your prescription. It's breaking up the optics of the vision that you have. And so tell me, when you say it fluctuates, in what setting? Reading, computer, driving, television?
Well, we just finished a 1,000-mile trip going 2 states.
Oh.
And at 84, I actually drove the whole way. But I had to make sure that I'm using the fog lines on the side of the road to keep me centered. I passed a driver's test recently, but it's just one of those situations where I'm bothered by the fluctuation. I can spend an afternoon at the wheel, and I can go from probably pretty good vision to asking my wife, hey, give me that road sign. I missed it. So
Arlie,
I realized blinking is much better to do, which is why I don't do enough.
Right there. Right there, you have a really important key.
Blinking.
And I want to make sure that we don't miss that.
Blinking.
Because you need to know, and this may help you, but certainly everyone listening, whether the fluctuation is something that you notice when you're reading or driving or wherever it is, the most common reason is the surface of the eye begins to dry out. The reason it begins to dry out is the more intensely you're working with your eyes, which is to say, when you're driving, you don't want to miss anything. So your brain is telling your eyes, don't blink now because I don't want to miss the turn. So you stop blinking. Normal blink rate is 20 times a minute, all right? When you're working intensely, like when you're working on a computer or driving, it goes down to 2 times a minute.
Wow.
And so the problem with that's a 90% decrease, because when you blink and only when you blink, you release the tears that keep your vision clear, right? That's a mechanical system. Most people think it's automatic. The automatic tear system is the emergency tear system that turns on and floods the surface when it gets desperately dry. When you're driving down the road and you're looking at those signs and you forget to blink, the surface begins to degrade. And that's the fluctuation. So you have to find ways to reintegrate blinking into, because especially with your macular degeneration, as the acuity that you have is diminishing a little bit, you're working harder and harder to see the same signs down the road. Consequently, because you're working harder at that task, you're blinking less. As you blink less, the surface dries out, and you make it worse, right? So
you nailed it right on. Matter of fact, sir. I was watching March Madness on TV, and they had the same thing.
That's right. Screen time is associated with a 90% decrease in the blink rate, which decreases the quantity and the quality of the tears that are being produced. So when you notice the fluctuation, your very first thought should be blink. Your second thought is, depending on the efficacy of your blink mechanism, you might need to augment with artificial tears. But blink first, because it's faster, easier, cheaper.
The artificial tears is disappointing substitute, and I was wondering if anybody makes anything with a little meibomian gland oil in it as well as the regular artificial tears.
There is a new drug drop. It's not really a drug. I'm going to call it. It's a drug only insofar as it's a prescription item. Which means it's expensive, but it is a unique drop that replaces the tear film, and it lasts much longer than a standard artificial tear. It's called Meibo, M-E-I-B-O, and it's designed to be a replacement for those meibomian gland tears. And three, 4 times a day can be fairly effective. But of course, it's relatively new, which means it's relatively expensive.
Yeah.
And poorly covered by insurance, et cetera. Yeah. But I think that the future of that, I think it's the most effective by a leap in technology for longevity, because most drops, you put the drop in and the effect of it is gone within 5 minutes.
Or less.
Question. So is dry eye affected a lot by stress levels, like if you're at work a lot and you're under
stress? Sure, it can be. But the more trouble you have with that blink phenomena, which is to say the intensity of your work, and, you know, screen time is the worst. Again, 90% decrease in the frequency. But then, Ken, what happens? That gland system lives and dies by the old adage, if you don't use it, you
lose it.
And consequently, you do that day in and day out, day after day after, month after year. And in a period of time, when you blink, you don't produce tears at all. So oftentimes what I'm seeing is patients who have lost 50-75% of not only the gland structure, but the glands that they have left are not producing tears.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, that is that suggestion for that drop it makes the phone call worthwhile. I appreciate your expertise.
I'm glad we did something of value.
Well, I got a pair of eyelids that sound like my windshield wipers on a dry windshield screen.
Oh, dear.
I think that's part of that is exactly the point I was making, Arlie. Exactly the point. We have to check and make sure that when you blink, you're actually producing tears.
Yeah.
And then when you hit the road, you got to blink. But I think that'll address the fluctuation much more effectively than dialing the glasses. Okay.
One last question has to do with how quickly 8 drops disappear because of the drainage system. Is there a sponge or anything that they can use to help retain some of this expensive liquid if we get it in the eye?
Brilliant. You can block the tear drainage duct, and actually the tear drainage system is not passive like a sewer sitting in the, or like a drain sitting in the bottom of a shower. It is active, which is to say every time you blink, it actively sucks tears off the surface.
Mm. Uh-huh.
And so that's one of the reasons that when you put a drop in, it's gone within a very short time.
Yep.
This new drop, it's not only the lubricity of that molecule, but its adherence to the ocular surface that allows it to stick around.
Mm-hmm. Well, great.
But in terms of your driving, make sure you blink, and then maybe we just need to take a look and make sure the glands are producing tears when you blink, right?
Oh. Yes. Thank you so much.
Instead of your dry windshield.
That's right. We don't want that.
No.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Again, I appreciate your expertise.
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you so much for the call, Arlie. Okay, Dr. Gilbert, we're going to give you a little break on eyes, and we're going to go over to Dr. Pentland here for our next caller.
Okay.
Sherry, you are on the way next, and we may have time for one more call after that, 800-465-8770. This is Leading Edge Medicine. We'll be back. And we know who picked out this song, Dr. Mixon. Oh, yeah, he'd be bouncing all over with this song. Good morning. Leading Edge Medicine here, and Dr. Mixon on spring break with his family. He will be back with us next week. In the studio, though, Dr. Hugh Matt, Dr. Michael Gilbert from Northwest Vision Institute, and Dr. Ken Pentland from Longevity Medical Clinics as well. We are headed to Stanwood. We have Sherry on the line. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning. I have a daughter-in-law that lives in the Midwest, and after a colonoscopy, she's been diagnosed with ulcerative colitis.
Mm-hmm.
She has been suffering for a while, but just diagnosed. She's been on prednisone for 2 months and trying to get on a medication. And the original medication was Humira, but her insurance wouldn't pay for that. So now she is waiting for another one. I will spell it. I don't know how it's pronounced. It's Y-U-S-I-M-I-R-I. So do you have any other suggestions that might be helpful? The doctor said this was an autoimmune disease, and he related it to her COVID vaccines, which doesn't sound quite right. But
okay. So, what kind of symptoms are most prominent for her right now?
She's been losing weight.
Okay.
And she does have diarrhea.
Mm-hmm. Is there a lot of bleeding?
I'm not sure about that. I do know that the colonoscopy showed quite a large section that was totally red.
Okay. Okay. So depending on the severity of the inflammation, because ulcerative colitis, it basically, compared to Crohn's disease, for example, ulcerative colitis starts from the bottom up, whereas Crohn's can be patchy throughout the digestive tract, right? So depending on the extent of the inflammation, how much of the colon is affected, you know, different orders of therapy may be indicated. And so in some situations when it's severe, yes, maybe a biologic like Humira would be the best course. Although, however, you know, we also want to take steps to avoid the cause of the inflammation to start as well. And so sometimes there can be things that can be done to reduce the cause as well as address the symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
So in, when I used to, my background is in GI, as you know, and I used to see a lot of cases where patients would come in with these kinds of concerns. One of the things we would do a lot for those patients is food sensitivity testing. Mm. And the literature shows that there's a high percentage of sensitivity in ulcerative colitis cases for dairy. And so one of the easiest things to do is just eliminate dairy. That could maybe take the inflammation down a notch.
Oh, including ice cream and cheese?
And cheese and yogurt.
Yeah.
And any source of whey and casein. And I should say, this is not the same as a lactose intolerance. It's a dairy sensitivity.
Okay.
So just the difference. Lactose intolerance, you can just take the enzyme and be mostly okay.
Okay.
Dairy sensitivity is where your immune system is reacting to proteins in milk, whey, and casein. So any source of whey and casein has to be avoided in that case.
Dr. Pentland, sometimes people will avoid dairy, maybe not 100%, and they don't really feel better.
Mm-hmm.
What then?
Yeah, so the you know, how sensitive they are, you know, how it kind of informs how careful they have to be. I had a colleague who was so sensitive to gluten, in her case, if her husband had a beer and kissed her, she would get sick.
Oh, wow.
Right. So it depends on the severity of your sensitivity.
Interesting. Because, you know, I mean, the most common allergens are dairy, eggs, gluten. So if people avoid that, can they then avoid a flare-up of the disease without really... I mean, it's not easy. I grant it. Mm-hmm. Avoiding dairy for some people, you know, like people who like sugar, cheese, and and also lots of foods have cheese in them. Right. So you have to be very, very careful. You have to read labels. Mm. So it's not just like saying, oh, avoid dairy. That means a lot, like we just said.
Right.
And sometimes it's not easy, but sometimes people can do it. Now, if they avoid all dairy and then they avoid all eggs and they avoid soy products because these are common, but they still don't feel better, then is it wise to go ahead and stay that way, or can they go back to these foods?
Right. So that's a great question. So if, like Dr. Mixon is fond of saying, if you don't measure, you don't know.
That's right. One of his rules.
But food sensitivities change over time.
Yes and no. So your reactions to them can change over time, but oftentimes these are hereditary. And if they're, so in some cases, there are genes that say you're predisposed to react to dairy. In other cases, from inflammation, you can develop a sensitivity to that food because of permeability of the gut, leaky gut, they call it. But because of this inflammation, you can also develop a situation where the gut bacteria becomes dysbiotic as opposed to probiotic. So there's a proliferation of bad bacteria that is also producing inflammation because it's become a bad neighborhood, basically.
Fair enough. Yeah.
So two types of testing are generally indicated for these kind of cases. One is find out which foods are actually the culprits, because it's not always dairy. It sometimes is gluten, eggs, almonds, cane sugar, these kinds of things. And then the other thing is what's going on in the gut as far as good and bad bacteria, digestive factors, inflammatory factors, a good comprehensive stool analysis in that case. And then you have a better handle on what's going wrong and how to fix it.
Mm. Okay. Mm. Well, that's helpful. I will pass on the information. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Yeah, you're welcome. You know, I have many patients that do need steroids for inflammatory gut conditions.
Right.
And the goal always is do the job and then wean off as quickly as possible, because long-term steroid use carries its own side effects. And sometimes stress is such a big contributor to a flare-up in their lives. And it's always hard, but at that time you're going through it, there's nothing you can do. But if you can maybe do things like, meditation, adaptogens, exercise, you know, sleep. Sleep is such an important factor that can help mitigate some of the expression of these autoimmune diseases. It can really help a lot. But it's hard to do in this day and age.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And inflammation is something that we hear a lot about now.
Yes.
But 10 years ago, 15, 20 years ago, we never really heard about that. We thought, you know, my owie's inflamed. But it's a big problem, and we're hearing more about it all the time.
It's always hidden in the suffix itis.
Ah.
This itis or that itis.
Okay. Right. And then there's inflammation hiding in there.
Food, oh my gosh, you have to be so careful. It's just so difficult. Because prepared and processed foods are so easily available.
Well,
and
even when I was talking about casein, you know, just as an example, the waxy coating on apples in the produce section can have casein in it, or anything on the label that says potassium caseinate is a derivative of casein. So you have to be kind of savvy.
So we started the hour. I mentioned I woke up this morning and was scanning the ophthalmic headlines, and one of those was a study out of India.
Oh, really?
And they were looking at patients or people who have high junk food. And so if you have four or more, they considered you high on a daily, like sodas and sugary snacks and highly processed foods. There's a 50% increase in glaucoma.
Really?
In patients who have high junk food diets.
Really?
Wow.
50%. Intraocular pressure rises because
Cheetos causes.
And it all comes back to the gut eventually, like I said.
You're right, Dr. Pentland.
So, unclear mechanism, a lot of, you know, clearly more research indicated.
Right.
But probably it's the sugar, I would guess.
Yeah. And I'm certain I'm allergic to sugar.
Right.
I will not do the test. Not yet.
No. Oh, boy. Or now, food sensitivity tests, that's an important thing to do.
Right.
Where would you get that done? Is that with your primary doctor? Is that something we do at Longevity?
That's a good question. Yeah. We do it at Longevity. That's a sort of a specialty lab. And, you know, when you get a food sensitivity test, it's not quite the same as a food allergy test.
Okay.
Nomenclature differences between practitioners. But a food allergy is usually an IgE, antibody-mediated reaction. Hypersensitivity.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's mediated by hives. It's the where your throat swells up. The peanut allergy. That's IgE.
You see that. Okay.
The one we're talking about in this case is IgG or IgA antibodies. And those are more systemic, gradual reactions. So, and that's a blood test. And you have to kind of have a specialty lab practitioner that will, you know, run that for you.
All right.
And we can do it at Longevity. So we can do the food sensitivity test, and we also do a more comprehensive stool analysis for gut microbiome and so many other things.
Wow. And coming up, we're also focusing on the heart with our Heart Health Day, and we have just 1 minute left of our show. So, Dr. Umat, why don't you tell us quickly about when and where and what to do to sign up?
Oh, it's on May 9th. We are calling it Heart Health at Longevity, and it's from 9 to 3, all three locations simultaneously. Anybody can come in. It's not restricted to Longevity patients. They've had access to this for a long time. This is the first time we're opening our doors to non-Longevity patients, and it's wanting to know more about your cholesterol. Is it dangerous for you? Do you have some genetic markers? Is there some inflammatory markers that means that the plaque is about to burst or not? Do you need to do something about it quickly and urgently, or can you just carry on with, you know, daily what you're doing right now? And knowing about it is important because not all cholesterol is bad. Cholesterol is actually important. And if you have tons of large, fluffy molecules, well, you're not at risk as much as somebody who may have the same number but has very smaller, highly concentrated, atherogenic LDL particles that are very dangerous for them. Mm-hmm. So those people have to be more proactive. And then with that, we'll also tell you about the omegas. So very valuable test.
Very good.
If you don't know your numbers, you should know.
You should know. So sign up for this Heart Health Day. It's on a Thursday next month, May 9th, at all three of our clinics in Kirkland, Tacoma, and in Linwood. And here's that number to call for that appointment. And you can do that Monday morning. It's 866-86-YOUNG. That's 866-86-YOUNG. And online, go to lmclinic.com. Well, that's our show for today. Thank you so much for listening. My name is Lynette, and on behalf of Dr. Ken, Dr. Michael Gilbert, and Dr. Umat, have a wonderful rest of your weekend. We'll see you next week right here on Leading Edge Medicine.